You are listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, where every Thursday at noon, we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, community, economy, all six areas of the healthful living model. And you can read more about that at healthfulliving.org. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist and healthful living advocate with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living.
And today on our show, we're going to be speaking about sustainability. Julie and I have been speaking about this quite a bit recently when we're talking about healthful living and what does it mean to be healthful living or a person who is healthful living. And we just keep coming back to this topic of sustainability, which seems to be everywhere lately. And recently we ran into a colleague who's going to be joining us here on the show at about 20 minutes or so from now, Oren Jaffe. He is a sustainability consultant, and he's going to be joining us, and we're going to be learning all about some really incredible work that he's been doing with organizations as more and more of we humans become focused around this issue of sustainability. And I just want to start off with a bit of a definition, because it's always a great place to start. And Wikipedia is a terrific place to get a condensation of all that. So Wikipedia talks about sustainability being a characteristic of a process or state that can be maintained at a certain level indefinitely. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When you think about sustainable, ongoing, going
right.
on.
It has
and
to
on
be able
on.
To go over, it has to be able to continue without depleting something in the process so that it can continue
and
for the long term.
Long term. Indefinitely is a pretty big word. And when I just stop and think about the simplicity of that definition, something that will go on and on and can continue indefinitely. And then when we come back and look at so many factors of what's going on in our world today, of course it's an apropos issue because we find so many things that are not sustainable, where we're using up resources.
So why don't you give some examples for people in the audience of areas that wouldn't be sustainable?
Well, they speak here of human ecological support systems, the planet's climactic system, systems of agricultural, industry, forestry, fisheries, and all the systems upon which they depend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how we humans are utilizing these systems. And they point out here that in the past, complex human societies have died out, sometimes as a result of their own growth-associated impacts on these support systems. So everything, as we know, is interconnected, and there's reliance upon one factor of another. And if we use up one thing, it's going to affect us elsewhere.
So an example of something that would not be sustainable is something that, as you use it, it's not replaced. So, for example, if we cut down trees faster than we grow trees, then that would not be sustainable. If we use gasoline as energy faster than we could replace it, which, of course, gasoline isn't really, you can't really replace gasoline. It would take probably hundreds of thousands of years to make more oil. So if we use that gasoline and we keep using it as our main source of fuel, it will not be sustainable because we will not be able to keep that same level of production up over time. If we continue on with our mass agriculture where we do these huge monocrops of corn or soy and deplete the soil year after year after year, this is not sustainable. So that those are just a few examples in my mind that just come to the top of my head of how sustainability really affects us in many different areas. And in the past, in the industrial age, I think we kind of thought we were too smart for ourselves that we could just do or produce anything we wanted and we didn't really need to think about that. But when you look at native cultures, they don't have garbage piling up in huge landfills and they didn't clear cut their forests and have no resources left at the end. You know, in other words, they worked with their environment. When they did kill a buffalo, they used all the different parts of it.
Right.
All of those kinds of things of ways of living in harmony with everything else in a way that we can continue this for years. And there are ways we can do that. So for energy, we don't have to just use gasoline and coal. We could use solar, wind, all sorts of different types of energy that are more sustainable because, for instance, wind does not get depleted over time.
Right. That's why they call it renewable.
Right.
Yeah. Renewable energy that there's an ongoing source of it coming online again.
And also things like, to me, sweatshops in China are not sustainable because I don't think you can continue to either keep a group down or abuse a group or something without eventually having it end. It can't continue like that forever. They'll get to a point where those systems, we're already seeing it. We're already seeing that the fact that they try to make everything as cheaply as possible, mm-hmm. that they're getting lead in the products, mm-hmm. unsafe products, dangerous dog food and pet food and, you know, those kinds of things. These are not sustainable ways. And so, you know, we need to look at how it's going to affect the individual, the planet, a lot of the things we talk about in healthful living, right? Healthful living, we have these kind of six areas that we came up with that we feel are needed for a holistic life, which would be health of us as individual people, mm-hmm. health of our mind and our spirit as well, health of our community and those around us that we support, that we either support or require for additional support. The economy, we cannot destroy the environment for the sake of right. the economy, because that is not sustainable in the long term. And I think I'm missing number six.
And well, you kind of schmirbled it in there, which was the environment, the planet, of course, our physical environment. And on that economic piece of it, I always clarify that it's not just the economy, but systems of economy and how we humans have set up our systems of exchanging resources and value between us. And it's clearly not sustainable where we've got, you know, concentration of wealth where such few companies are providing for like everybody, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And there really isn't transparency in a lot of these systems.
Well, and the person we're going to speak to next, I think, is working with some of those companies to make
exactly.
them more sustainable.
Yes, because as we're seeing, there are sustainability initiatives popping up everywhere. Sustainability legislation.
And consumers, and educated, informed consumers, want to buy from companies that employ these ideas and methods and things like that. And so it's being demanded by the consumer, and so the companies are realizing that this is important. Unfortunately, it takes their bottom line for them to wake
right.
up, but that's okay, you know, right. as long as I'm just happy that there are companies that do care enough about that they are interested in these types of things. And
well, and that's one of the key points, is that they kind of have to care, because ultimately consumers, you and I, you listening, really truly drive everything in the end, even though we can very often seem disempowered, like we have no choice. The truth is we do have a choice, and we're beginning to see places, and I'm sure we'll hear some examples of that today from Oren, where consumers spoke up or consumers have had enough, and they let it be heard or mm-hmm. known in the marketplace by an immediate and radical shift in their consumption behavior.
Absolutely. I think we saw that maybe even in the late 90s with all those, you know, we were doing all of the cheap products from China mm-hmm. and all of that. And then I think it was Kathy Lee Gifford. They found out that her products were being
right.
made in a sweatshop, you know, and people, thank goodness, didn't want that. And so people were realizing, wow, if I'm going to put my name on something, I need to really know the details of what's going on here and whether this is a positive for the, you know, the planet and sustainable for the long term or not.
Right. Right. Well, with so many different initiatives and charter programs and such coming up all around with sustainable development, there are some common principles that are articulated again here on Wikipedia that underlie a lot of these programs. And one of them is, it says here, dealing with transparency and systemically with all the risks, uncertainty, and irreversibilities involved. So ensuring proper valuation, appreciation, and restoration of nature. So they're integrating some of our principles here, right, of course?
Our principles.
Our principles. We don't own healthful living. We're just aggregating our thoughts regarding it.
Right.
Integration of environmental, social, human, and economic goals in all of their policies.
Mm.
That makes complete sense, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Equal opportunity and community participation.
Mm-hmm.
Developing a sustainable community.
Mm-hmm.
Conservation of biodiversity and ecological integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Ensuring intergenerational equality.
Mm.
How does that sound?
Sounds good.
Yeah. A commitment to best practices. No net loss of human capital or natural capital.
Mm.
Now think about that one for a second. Think about how many businesses have no net loss of natural capital that aren't really, you know, sucking something from the planet that can't be replaced in order to generate their business.
Right, right.
It's so frequent.
Sure. Like, you know, there's some really interesting movements out there. There's the whole thing about paper and paper coming from trees and how trees take so long to grow, mm-hmm. whereas you can make paper with things like hemp or other materials which are much faster growing and much more renewable. It's not being done on any large scales right now, but these are the types of things that people could choose. It might be a little bit more expensive because the systems aren't currently in place and the supplies and the suppliers aren't currently in place. But these are ways that we can look at what is the best way to come up with some of these. What are some resources that are what we call renewable that we can renew very easily and rapidly? It doesn't take us 75 years to grow a tree. It's something that we can do pretty easily and isn't going to make a big impact on the planet.
Right. And I think one of the underlying tenets of this notion of sustainability is that individually and collectively as humans, we desire a healthful state. Mm. Right. I don't think we'd be talking about sustainability if we really didn't inside of ourselves care about life being full of health.
Well, I'm going to argue with you a little. I know that you're correct on some level, but I don't think the average person is driven by that. And I don't think the average person necessarily knows that. But if they go back to what does everybody want for their children, it's always the same, which is exactly what you're talking about, which is they care that their children have an earth when they, as the new generations come around and the rest of us go away, is the earth going to still be in good shape? Are there still going to be the resources that people need? Is there going to be safe drinking water and clean air? And are we going to, have all of those things that we owe it to the next generation? I had seen somewhere that, what was it? We don't pass the earth on to our offspring. We borrow the earth from our offspring or something. So in other words, being that it's really, it's not ours to mess with. It's mm-hmm. ours to protect mm-hmm. for those future generations.
Right. The earth we live in today is we're borrowing from the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to think about it. When I say underlying health, is simply that I mean that we desire, we could not care about sustainability and let the world go to crap, so to speak, and just let us deplete all the resources and let us extinguish human life on the planet
and let us just have all this stuff.
If we really inside didn't care.
No, I agree with you. People, but I guess my,
consciously.
I guess I was taking it a step further. We want our grandchildren to be able to see what a tiger looks like. We don't want to kill off all the species. And, so if you ask an average person, what do they want for their future grandchildren? They're going to talk about, I want a clean earth. I want them to be healthy. I want them to be happy. I want them to have their basic needs met and hopefully more. I want them to know what a giraffe looks like. You know what I mean? So what I'm saying is, I guess all I was trying to say was that they may not consciously be choosing health,
right.
But if you ask them what the values that they hold that
exactly.
are important to them.
That's the point I meant to make, and I appreciate your clarifying clarifying that. Because if people were actively practicing it, we wouldn't have a lot of the challenges that we do in the world. My point is that I think it really does reside within the hearts of everyone
right.
to desire this state.
I think they just don't know what those things are that they can do. It is not... They're not educated in that way, and none of us are getting that information. You actually have to seek out information on how to do something in a more healthful, sustainable way. And hopefully that will continue to change and come more into the forefront. And I think as more people know what they can do, they would do more of those things.
Right, right. So we'll be speaking in just a few minutes with Oren Jaffe. He's a sustainability consultant and green consultant. And he'll be in with us in just a few moments. But one of the things I want to ask him, because I'm really curious about, what are companies doing? And are companies, a lot of these big companies, are they making efforts to change to be more in alignment with a sustainable perspective and sustainable business practices?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in this the massive globalization we've seen in the past number of years. And the world is so interconnected. And there's Of course, China is probably going to be a big, big factor in this discussion as far as the number of products coming from China and issues associated with that. One of the things I know that we'll get up talking about today is chemical content in a lot of products, and chemicals being something that were so, you know, cheap to produce, had so many different functions, but as far as their interaction with humans, not terribly sustainable.
Well, because they're so toxic.
Right.
So, right. You know, if we keep using, with our tens of thousands of different chemicals, if we keep using them at the same rate we're using them, we're going to see more and more disease and problems. And that is really not sustainable over the long term. And that's the movement in the autism world that they've already begun to figure out, which is that we can't continue to poison the planet. It is a factor in all of these children that when you have a certain system that can't process toxins as well as somebody else can, you're more likely to be injured by them. And what is one of the primary places that a lot of these toxins injure is the nervous system. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them are used to kill bugs or different things, and a lot of those are neurotoxins. And so, you know, people are learning that we need to find more sustainable methods. So it's actually a movement that's becoming pretty popular and well known right now, because unfortunately we're seeing a lot of effects already from some of these.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that we'll learn, I'm curious to hear more from Oren about this, is that as far as making things more sustainable, it's not always a matter of inventing new stuff as much as it is broadening our minds a bit. Mm-hmm. The healthcare system in this country, the predominant healthcare system, is not sustainable in that just in its own definition of how it operates, it discludes many of the known human approaches to health and wellness.
Well, if we were going to make a healthcare
there
system,
you go.
Our healthcare system would be based on how do you take care of yourself and maintain health, mm-hmm. right? Which is obviously the sustainable model of what do we need to do over time to sustain our health and to sustain all of those our vitality and energy and all of that. And it's not in a lot of the models that are currently in the healthcare industry. And I think that's one of the primary reasons why our current healthcare system is so broken. It is not sustainable.
And it's not really oriented towards sustainability.
It hadn't been in the past because it wasn't really understood, or I think people just weren't looking at that. I think a lot of decisions were made for economical reasons and still are. And that is not, in this case, that's not supporting the things that are really important,
right,
to make something sustainable over the long term.
And other parts of the world are figuring this out. Europe, for one, is imposing tremendous new legislation regarding chemicals and sustainability requirements from various companies, and just a lot of higher order thinking that's going on over there that we're way behind the times in, mm-hmm. and just slowly beginning to catch up. So consumer product manufacturers that want to sell products in Europe have to abide by a completely different standard than if they're going to sell it in the U.S. And as a U.S. citizen, I find that tremendously embarrassing, mm-hmm. that companies, I won't name any yet, and perhaps Oren will, that we would consider to be respectable are perfectly willing to sell something that would be regurgitated by the European public, but oh yeah, they can sell it in America, no problem.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that there actually are products made by companies now that are banned in Europe because of the ingredients in them, like certain body care products. And interestingly, this is really upsetting to me. So what did they do? They didn't make the product healthier. They made a healthier version of the product to sell in Europe, and they still sell the toxic version here in the U.S., which I find, really upsetting. So again, there's some really good progress in the world of sustainability, and there are some things that still require some movement.
Right, right. Boy, this subject could really bum you out, because on the one hand, you can realize when you really think about something, a system or a process or just really anything, and you ask yourself, is it sustainable? Can this continue? Do we have the resources that go into this thing, are they infinite?
Mm-hmm.
And in so many walks of our life, they are not.
I don't think they have to be. I mean, I guess infinite. When I think of infinite would be impossible. Nothing's infinite.
Right.
I don't mean to be arguing with you. It's just when I think of that, I think of renewable. renewable, I think it's a little bit better of a word. Because because we don't have an infinite supply of hemp, but hemp is renewable so quickly that as we use it, we can reproduce and resupply so we don't deplete over time. So anyway, that's what I'm thinking is going on there.
All right, well, let's take a quick musical break, and then we'll be back with our guest and learn much more from a professional who can speak to us about sustainability.
You're listening to Reality Sandwich.
Welcome back. You're listening to 89.5 KPOO. This is Reality Sandwich with Martin and Julie Matthews. And we're here talking about sustainability today. And we're going to introduce our guest. Orin Jaffe is a sustainability consultant. His company here in San Francisco is called Eco Tuesday. And he was actually listening in to our earlier discussion on sustainability. And let's welcome him to the show.
Hello. Thanks. It's great to be here.
Great to have you. Yeah. And you have a couple different organizations you work with, correct?
Yeah, I do. Eco Tuesday is it's a monthly networking event. It's the premier networking event for sustainability executives, environmental, and nonprofit people. And it's a structured event, so it's not just a free-for-all happy hour, but you actually can come out and know everybody that's in the room. And then we're doing it now in Los Angeles, Seattle, Minnesota, and Marin, and soon to be all over the country.
Great. So,
that's one of my many gigs, if you will. And the other one is a company called the Greenit Group, and they are a sustainability consulting firm, and I work with corporations and small and mid-sized businesses on different green projects, and that ranges from green building to supply chain, which is my specialty, consumer products. It runs the gamut.
So I'm glad you brought up the term green, because we haven't talked about that yet. We've been using renewable and sustainable. So, and green is, what did I see yesterday? We were kind of joking that we see the word green everywhere, and I'm trying to remember what it was that was green. Oh, I don't know, but it was something, you know, like, of course it is. It was, you know, something really, really basic, but everybody's using that as a buzzword. So what does it mean to be green?
Green is a very overused word currently. It is, you know, used by everybody to try to jump on this bandwagon. And that is really a big problem, is that it's being overused and companies are trying to, you know, maximize their opportunities and use the word when they're really not green. So it means something different to every single person. You know, you have companies that will, you know, choose to use recycled paper and all of a sudden they're green.
Right.
Whereas, you know, really what green means to me and to some of my colleagues is really looking at your company internally, within your, you know, human resources, your waste, your energy, your water usage, your transportation, your carbon footprint, as well as then your employees, and looking at offering them volunteer days or hours during their month, offering them nutrition, offering them workout, a gym membership, and all that's going to lower your healthcare costs, more productive employees, putting on solar panels, you know, looking at alternative energy, and really taking a holistic approach and looking at environmental and social opportunities within every business decision. It's not just financial, but also include the social and environmental.
Wow. You know, I was just thinking, you know, it can be a little pricey for the average person to put solar panels on their home, or if you live in an apartment, you can't necessarily do that. But, you know, when you said that, it just dawned on me, there's probably some pretty big factories or facilities with huge roofs that it would probably be not a lot of money for them to lay out, and probably some pretty good return. Are there companies that are doing more of that?
There's a lot of companies, and really it comes down to business decisions. You know, corporations and businesses are not going to, you know, go green or be sustainable unless it's profitable, you know? And so when I go and work with a company, that's the first thing I talk about. There's all these other benefits to the environment and, you know, to your employees, but that's really hard to quantify. So you go in there saying, hey, you put solar, it costs you $200,000, you're going to save $10,000 a month. Well, that's a 2-year payback, you know. So you can, you know, put it into financial terms, which is what they understand. There's a couple different kinds of alternative energy companies that are out there. and solar companies in particular, ones where you would, the consumer or the business, would buy the panels, put them on the roofs, and then get all the benefit from them. There's a new type of company that's being called solar as a service company, where the company actually pays to put the panels on your house, and what you negotiate is a fixed rate on your energy for the next 10 or 15 years. They monitor it. They take care of it, and then the extra costs and the extra benefit that they get, the extra energy that they save, they can then sell back to the utility and leverage to make money on the top of that. And you have a fixed rate, and you kind of use their house. So it's a way to get in for no money. A company called Sunrun, a company called Borrego Solar. You know, there's some great companies, SPG Solar. Sun Edison, and then there's big corporations like Adobe. Google has one of the biggest solar arrays in all of the Silicon Valley right now. They're doing amazing things that are out there.
That's great.
Now, one thing that fascinates me, Oren, is about 10, 15 years ago, you wouldn't have found a sustainability consultant. You know, we weren't really oriented or thinking this way, yet when I hear you say all these types of things, caring about, you know, how you're impacting the environment, having concern for your employees. I mean, these are all things that warm my heart when I think about, you know, the idealistic opportunity in an organization. You know, when you pull people together and really how you want to treat people and what's really a great way to create things in order to thrive and all this beautiful stuff. So why now that we're actually thinking this way? I mean, is the planet in peril? And so what's going on that we are now, all of a sudden, everybody's thinking about sustainability? Is it both because we have to and also partially maybe because we have opportunity now?
Well, I think, you know, from a corporate perspective, there's definitely financial opportunity. I mean, Walmart has jumped on the bandwagon in an amazing way and are profiting from it. It's also the consumers, you know. People are, you know, like you were talking about a little earlier, there's a lot of toxins in products. There's a lot of, you know, sprays and chemicals that go into a lot of the conventional types of fruit and vegetables. And people are getting sick. You know, we have, you know, one out of two people now will get cancer. We have, you know, in their lifetimes, it is some form of cancer.
Wow.
It is unbelievable, all the chemicals and hormones. And people are standing up and saying, no, you know, we're going back to sourcing locally. You know, there's a lot of restaurants and companies in San Francisco now that have a mandate that they won't buy anything if it's over 200 miles away. You know, these are ways to, you know, it's all coming back to the way that it was, you know, when our great grandmas were here, you know, and grandfathers, when they sourced locally, you support the community. And now there's even companies out there with social missions where they're stakeholders and they are not the shareholders. So their company focus is not simply towards maximizing a return to the shareholders, but it's for the community and the employees. And when you have a focus there, you have a very different type of company, and you have a lot more benefit.
I would think that even, you know, from the health, I mean, you know, sick days is a big issue. So if you supported your employees from that perspective, that could be a huge savings in money. And in the work that, that Martin and does in the whole world of, you know, organizational psychology, productivity of your employees, I think all of those things would have huge bottom line. Maybe they're soft costs, or but I think that all of those things really probably are starting to make a big impact on some of the upper management, realizing that these are some good areas for opportunity.
It is. I mean, it not only gets the employees engaged, you know, how excited are they when they have a weight loss or a nutrition contest? But they're now proving that green buildings, where you have more light, more natural light, you have filtered water, you know, low flow toilets, you know, solar, they actually have more natural light. Guess what? People are more productive. And so you're able, they're putting it in schools now in the Northwest, and you're seeing the school test scores go up, less, you know, fights, and less, you know, kids are less restricted when you get natural
sunlight.
They're also actually have done a study, and in fact, Walmart was one of the heads of this. They have a couple of prototype stores. One of them's in Aurora, Colorado, and it is a completely green store. And what they've done is they have a ton of sunlights. Or what it's called, skylights.
Yeah.
And it saves them a ton of money.
Wow.
And guess what? Shoppers spend more money.
Interesting.
When there's more natural light. So there's all these things that are coming out. So it takes a little bit of risk. It takes a little bit of thinking outside the box. But the companies that are going proactive are getting a lot of benefit. And it's not just good PR, which helps.
Yeah.
But it's productivity and bottom line dollars.
Wow.
Well, it's very encouraging to hear. I mean, when the word that keeps coming up in my mind is caring. It's like, okay, now we care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now these companies care. About the impact that they're having and about people's well-being and about the well-being of, you know, one another and the environment. And perhaps it's not, maybe it's overly simplified of me to say that, you know, 20 years ago we didn't care, or 10 years ago we didn't care because we would just, you know, burn through our resources. And
we didn't know.
Perhaps we didn't know. We didn't have the feedback that we do now, right? We didn't have the health epidemics quite as much as we do now. So we have all this negative feedback about the implications of how we've been, but also we didn't quite have the opportunity to do something about it that we do now. 10 years ago, there weren't the solar installations that they have now. So all these changes are really brewing about now, where both we're learning, you know, yeah, we care, we have to do something, and there's opportunity to do something.
Well, and guess what? You know, the cost of not doing it is not being in business. So it's becoming that, you know, important now. Companies that aren't doing anything are simply going to fade away.
Wow.
And it's you know, we're seeing the rise of oil and all the economy stuff that's happening. Well, if you don't start looking at your environmental and social bottom lines from a corporate perspective, you're not actually maximizing your profit from the definition of what a corporation does.
Right.
So you're missing out. And, you know, a lot of companies just go and they don't have time and they're, you know, just flying at the speed of business. And if they don't step back and start to, you know, make decisions from the triple bottom line or integrated bottom line perspective, they're not going to be around. And you're going to see a lot of companies start to fold over the next few years. Simply because they are not willing to change or not willing to look at where the world needs to go, has to go.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any examples that you can speak of either companies that are doing really well in getting up to speed on this, or perhaps any others that just are kind of just chugging along and not really getting it yet?
Well, one word I'd like to bring into the conversation is a word that's somewhat common now. It's called greenwashing. And we were talking about the word green, and what greenwashing is it's companies making claims about being green or sustainable with either out substantiation or without proof, and they're just kind of, you know, making, you know, some kind of a claim. There's a company called Contessa, which has packaged seafood, and you know you can buy, you know, different kinds of sort of processed seafood, and they have this thing. It's called the Green Choice Seafood, and it's a big green label. And all they did was, you know, green the factory that it's made in. The seafood's not sustainable. There's nothing about it that's organic or healthy, and they just are now calling, you know, they have a green label on it, you know. You know, I heard an interesting story about Office Depot, who they came out and said, we lowered our carbon footprint by, you know, 20 million tons. And what they had done was gotten rid of their fleet of trucks on the road, fired everybody, which got them 20 million, and then hired them back as independent contractors, each and every one of them, and came out and said, we have 20 million reduction because it's technically not on the books anymore.
Right. Yep. Oh, no.
So there's that. And then there's the other side with, you know, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Walmart, but, you know, if you read what they're doing and the way that their senior leadership has stepped up to the plate, it is amazing. And when they make one decision about solar or about organic products or sourcing locally, it changes a whole entire industry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of ironic that they have wiped out the mom and pops and now have a new initiative to start sourcing locally and give back to all the communities and start to sort of bring all the industry back that they demolished, you know, the last 10 and 20 years. So they're, you know, if you start reading, they're really doing great things. And I, you know, I hate to tip my hat to them, but, mm-hmm, you know, they mm-hmm. really have done some great things. And really business, you know, because governments aren't stepping up,
mm-hmm.
Business, people are looking, customers and consumers are looking to business to make these decisions.
Yes.
Whole Foods Market is a great company. You can go into a Whole Foods Market and they have on some of their markets a big board that shows all the resources and materials that have been used to build the store, to light the store, and they have descriptions of them and little pieces of the recycled concrete and the glass they use and the tiles that they use and the
wow.
you know, low flow toilets and everything that they're doing, which is just, you know, amazing. You know, what kind of farms they're working with, mm-hmm. the types of produce. You know, a company like Clif Bar comes to mind, is doing amazing things. So, you know, some companies that aren't getting it quite is like Ford Motor Company. They're trying. You know, they have some hybrids, but, you know, really the average Ford car, which this was an amazing statistic I've heard, in the year 2005 or 2006 had less than 1 mile per gallon more efficient than the original Edison Model T in 1912.
Oh, no.
That came out, it had about 23, 24 miles to the gallon back in 1912. And the new Ford Focus, or, you know, the old Taurus, you know, has 24.7 or something. I mean, it's like, and, you know, you get these companies, even Toyota, you know, they put a lot of money into the Prius. They're doing great things. And then you still, you know, watch some sporting events and they're promoting the Toyota Tundra truck.
Mm.
That's very yeah. inefficient. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you have these companies kind of either playing both sides or, mm-hmm. you know, it's very hard because cars have to be made years in advance. So there's a ton of Ford F-150 trucks sitting there they have to sell. So they have to promote to mm. sell them. And, you know, the new ones are coming in a couple of years, but you're always a couple of years behind, which is really difficult. But if they don't start really getting on the bandwagon, you know, GM just laid off a ton of staff,
mm.
And you're going to see layoffs.
Well, wasn't it GM that made the first electric car that was such a huge success, and they
yep.
just dumped the whole thing?
Yep.
Did you ever – I always wonder that because I saw that movie –
Who killed the electric
yes.
car.
Yes. And it didn't really answer the question of why they killed the electric – I mean, they sort of alluded to it, but I don't know if you know anything from a sustainability – what really happened.
I think it was an internal decision.
Yeah.
Just something happened that nobody
–
knew about. I'm not too
yeah.
familiar with that, but I know they're coming out and everyone's, you know, excited about it. You know, and I mean, one of the big things that I see with sustainability and with what's going on is it's, you know, we're not going to build new, you know, we are building green buildings, but this isn't about building more and having more. It's really, I think the big opportunity is to look at efficiency. Let's just use less of what's already there and mm-hmm. make more efficient, you know, what we already have, mm-hmm. whether it's an existing building, and we're not going to be crashing down buildings and building new green ones. It's mm-hmm. just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we look at, you know, in buildings, the biggest cost is the heating and cooling. So if you can look at making your, you know, HVAC, which is the heating cooling systems, more efficient. There's companies out there that'll come in and for relatively, you know, small amount of money, a couple $100,000, make it 10-20% more efficient.
Hmm.
A lot of old buildings have stuff that just gets wasted away.
Yeah.
And if you just hone that in and look, that's where we're going to lower our footprint. That's
right.
where
right.
things are going to really start to move and where the opportunities are, again, for bottom line dollars to be mm. saved and maximized.
I wonder if in California or specifically San Francisco we could do away with some of the air conditioning in those big buildings, because I know in my home I've never needed air conditioning for a single day. It's just I need fresh air. So what would it be like if maybe the windows opened? Or I mean, again, that would be a pretty major rehaul of a building and may not be sustainable or doable for a lot, but it is just a question, how do we change our thinking and find new opportunities that we may not have thought of that might be even really simple.
Yep. And that's that exactly, having, you know, windows and leveraging the outside air
mm-hmm.
to circulate it within is what the greenest buildings are able to do now. And one of the big things is, you know, gosh, you don't need a central air conditioner. If everybody had their own window and a little space heater,
mm-hmm.
if you were cold, you
mm-hmm.
turn your space heater on for you
right,
in your desk.
Right.
And if you're, you know, warm, you open your window and your desk and have a little, you know, filtration to get your own air.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, sounds easy, but, you know, and the new buildings are all having that. Mm. But a lot of the old buildings, those are some of the retrofits that would make it
right,
a green building.
Right. I mean, it certainly sounds like it would be a challenge to some extent for the older ones and the newer ones. That sounds really, you know, no-brainer, because makes so much more sense. You know, if you, you can't possibly meet the heating and cooling needs and have the perfect temperature for every single person in the office, right?
And they're always too hot or
yeah,
too cold.
Right.
Always.
So, Oren, as a sustainability consultant, who calls upon you and what kind of things are you helping people to do?
That's a good question. You know, I one of the types of companies, I mean, a couple of the types of companies I'm working with, you know, one of them is a ticketing company, an eco-friendly ticketing company that provides box office solutions for Yoshi's and for Slim's, for the Harmony Festival.
Mm-hmm.
They do very nice tickets and print at home, and they have these box office. So these guys are already eco-friendly, and I'm, you know, coming in to consult to make sure they have their environmental message really solid for employees and for their new clients and public. You know, other companies are hiring me to be their green team to help develop their policies and procedures and make sure that their products that they're putting out are really what they say they are and validating information. You know, another big thing, the green building space is really one of the hottest spaces right now. And what's happening is that if you're a architect or a contractor, you need to use specific green products in order to have your building certified green.
Mm.
There's a certification called LEED, L-E-E-D, which is Leadership in Environmental and Energy Design.
Mm.
And it's a rating system. It's a point system. So the more green aspects you put into your building, the more points you get. The more points you get, the higher designation. It's either bronze, silver, gold, or platinum.
Hmm.
And so contractors and architects are demanding that the products they use fit into LEED. So a lot of green building product companies are calling us saying, we don't know what this means. We don't know how we fit in. So we're doing assessments on, you know, the products themselves and putting together a data sheet that they can give to construction, you know, contractors and architects that show how their products fit in to that.
Great.
And then the other thing, which you were talking about earlier, is a lot of consumer product companies now are dealing with issues around regulatory safety and environmental compliance with importing their products into other countries, specifically Europe, which has very, very high standards. And now California has adopted a lot of the European standards with banning phthalates, which
Great.
Are plastics, and lead and cadmium and mercury we've all heard about in the fish. And so a lot of companies are trying to adhere to different standards and make sure the products they have are safe, that they're not going to get sued. I mean, brand reputation is crucial when you're talking about companies like Disney and, you know, Sears and Sara Lee and some of, you know, Circuit City, major consumer and consumer electronic and product companies.
So there's been some implications of some of these common chemicals that are out there that we've been throwing around. We've done a lot of shows in the past about the 80,000 chemicals that are out there that nobody's ever really tested on humans, and now we're getting some feedback on some of the major ones that are affecting corporate behavior.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard a stat the other day, there's over 100,000 chemicals that are out there, and only 20% of them have been tested and they know what they do. So there's over 80,000 chemicals used in everyday products that no one's ever done a test.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea about what they do.
And that's a big hot button for me, with, you know, especially with all the kids that I work with, because they also don't test the chemicals on children. They test them on 150-pound male, which is very different than a pregnant woman or a child. And they don't ever test for synergy, because it would be almost impossible. There would be billions of ways you could put the chemicals together, these two chemicals, these five chemicals. And what do you, so there's an interesting thing on just heavy metals, where if you have one It's called the LD1, which is, means the what's the lethal dose it takes to kill one rat. So the lethal dose for mercury would kill this out of these 100 rats would kill one, and then the lethal dose of lead, this dose would kill one out of the 100. But if you put the lethal dose of one of both of those chemicals together, you now kill all 100 rats, not
right.
just two rats. So that's just one example of two chemicals, or in this case, heavy metals that we know of. How do all of these chemicals come together and affect people? It's mind-boggling, and we really need to look at that with products and all and how we manufacture things.
And I will say that, you know, what a new kind of industry is popping up and a new type of management system, and it's called chemical management. And it's something that companies have not had to deal with. Just like in the early 70s, they didn't have to deal with nutritional content. Mm-hmm. And now you see labels on the back mm-hmm. of every mm-hmm. product on the mm-hmm. nutritional. Well, mm-hmm. the time has now come with chemicals to have to deal with them in the same way that companies 20 years ago had to deal with nutrition. And I'm starting to really get engaged with what that means. And, you know, again, the first companies to start changing are going to, you know, be much better off. But, you know, it's very, very difficult. And what happens is, even if there's an approved chemical, and they might have a brand name. So, you know, the Dow and the DuPonts will have chemicals that are approved in mm-hmm. doses to, but I mean, you need chemicals. The chemicals are okay to use. They're not going away, but it's how you use them, and there's a responsibility around it. Now, so there's a brand name to the chemical that's used, and that chemical has an active ingredient. And what's happening is, you know, you're out in China, you're in rural China, there's lots of factories, and some factory owner's like, you know, why do I need to buy the DuPont? I know the active ingredient. Mm. My buddy around the corner, he makes a little chemical cocktail. Mm. He throws a couple things in there. It's the same active ingredient, and they use it, and hey, guess what? It works just as fine, but they don't know what effect it has. Mm. And these are the types of issues that are coming around that we just have no idea. You know? It's really interesting.
Wow.
In our last minute or two here, are there any resources, books, websites that people can learn more or maybe even make some changes in their own homes or small businesses?
Yeah, there's some great resources and websites. I would say if you're interested kind of on the business side and learning what you know, companies are doing, there's an incredible blog that a friend of mine, Nick Astor, has started called Triple Pundit, triplepundit.com, mm-hmm. P-U-N-D-I-T.com. There's also Grist, G-R-I-S-T.org. It's a daily email with amazing information. The big one that was bought by Discovery is treehugger.com. There's one, Sustainable Industries Journal is a magazine and an online, sustainableindustries.com. I could go on, sustainablebusiness.com is a great website. Hmm.
And you've got an event here in the city that you do weekly. How do folks connect
with that? Yeah, it's actually
monthly.
It's fourth Tuesday of the month, so unfortunately it was this last Tuesday. But next month, it's at the Sir Francis Drake Hotel over on Post and Sutter, I believe. You can go to ecotuesday.com and learn all about it. And actually, next month we have a sponsorship from Lopro. They have camera bags, and they made a 97% recyclable, amazing camera bag they're giving away for free to every Eco Tuesday participant.
Wow.
And you can go online and RSVP. It's $10 if you do it online, $20 at the door. And it is an engaging, intentional, there'll be 150 people and you'll know every single person in the room and what they do. So if you're curious about sustainability or anything we've been talking about, you know, come and get engaged and learn about what's going on out there.
Great. Well, thank you, Oren, for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
We've been chatting with Oren Jaffe. He is a sustainability consultant here in San Francisco. You can get information on him at ecotuesday.com. This has been Reality Sandwich Radio. We're here every Thursday at noon, serving up a palatable taste of the truth. And today we've been speaking about sustainability for all facets of our life. And it's tremendously important to remember that the things that we want as individuals affect what happens down the line and within larger corporations and bigger human systems. So remember that all change begins with you. We'll be back next Thursday at noon. Thanks for listening.